Hey guys, I wanted to tell you a little bit about Earwolf's newest show. It's called Stranglers. It's a bit of a shakeup from what Earwolf normally does, but I think you're going to dig it. Stranglers is an investigation into one of the most infamous unsolved serial killer cases ever, the Boston Strangler. So if you're not familiar, 50 years ago, 13 women were murdered in, you guessed it, Boston. Launched the biggest manhunt in Boston's history. We still don't really know who did it. Basically, like Serial, if instead of being just a random murder case, it was the most confounding, mysterious, interesting murder case ever. So yeah, go subscribe to Stranglers on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. And make sure to stick around to the very end of this episode of the Cracked Podcast to hear a sneak preview of Stranglers. This episode of the Cracked Podcast is sponsored by Squarespace. Whether you need a landing page, a beautiful gallery, a professional blog, or an online store, it's all included in your Squarespace website. So start your free trial today at squarespace.com and enter code CRACKED to get 10% off your first purchase. Squarespace, set your website apart. Chaos been round for a minute. Marketed, bottled it all. Internet, and welcome to another episode of the Cracked Podcast. My name's Jack O'Brien. I'm the editor-in-chief of Cracked, and this week we're listening to Life Round Here by James Blake, featuring Chance the Rapper. James Blake, who you might think of as a mopey British musician with a soulful voice, turns out is a really great hip-hop producer. He produced two songs on the recent Vince Staples album, Prima Donna, and he made my favorite remix of the past few years of Drake's Come Through. It's actually not on our Spotify playlist, but just search James Blake Come Through, THRU, and remix, and you should be able to find it. Here, actually, let's play a little segment of that. Yeah. Last night I brought DOA to the studio. They already had a stage and a booth. Anyways, we're listening to Life Round Here because this episode, we're taking what's known as a geographical cure in the world of ineffective problem solving, which is when someone tries to fix their life by moving or going on some elaborate vacation, never works out as well as City Slickers promised us it would, but it never stops seeming like a good idea. So this week, we're leaving the here and now of America, mid-November 2016, and going about as far away as we possibly can into space. And space is a subject that I was probably not sufficiently in awe of coming into this job and just adulthood in general. The version of space that Star Wars and my public school education put into my head is not as cool as the real thing. And today's episode is about some of the stuff that made me realize that. One thing we're not gonna get to, because it's a purely visual thing, and I don't know if you can tell, but this is mostly an audio medium. There's this YouTube video I think I saw for the first time in one of our columns, I think a John Cheese column. It's just a time-lapse video of the night sky where you can see that the stars are actually spinning around in a way that makes it clear we're on a planet that's just spinning and hurtling through space. Also, the time-lapse footage of Jupiter is pretty cool. We'll talk about that. The red dot is actually a giant churning hurricane, as we'll mention. There's this whole series of articles that we did that made me realize that sci-fi movies have never taken place on a planet that is half as cool as some of the real planets out there. Like, there's a planet that is just one entire giant gleaming diamond
There's a pool of water just floating freely out in space, like someone just teleported the Pacific Ocean 10 million light years away, except that it's 100,000 times bigger than our sun, so slightly larger than the Pacific. I'll talk about the fact that the length of days are arbitrary and how I think that's an underrated sci-fi element. I imagine a scene set on a planet where the sun rises and sets like every 15 minutes, or where days last 300 Earth days, which would mean that a night lasts longer than one of our seasons. You'd have to keep time of day with a calendar and a map. It would be awesome. In sci-fi movies, planets are just generally one Earth habitat all the way around. This is the ocean planet, where time moves slow. This is the forest planet inhabited by teddy bears. This is the ice planet. I think it's because space travel was just a metaphor for traveling around the planet Earth for most of the genre's history. And yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing them move beyond that to explore worlds where each planet is its own bizarre Twilight Zone philosophical puzzle of time and space and nature, which I guess is what Star Trek is. We talked on a past episode about sci-fi tropes that we most want to live inside of, and the amazing Caitlin Gill talked about the generation ship. And that's had my mind working ever since then. The entire generation of people who are born and die on a spaceship that's in the process of going somewhere. Maybe it'll be multiple generations. They'd fight wars to try and control the truth on the ship, since that truth becomes basically the only reality for the entire species going forward. You could have different waves of generations waking up from freezing, staggered across the different decades. I should say it's entirely possible. That's what that Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Pratt movie is about. I don't know if it's out yet. I have a six-month-old. I also haven't seen Arrival, which I'm told is more about linguistics than aliens and science. Aliens arrive, a linguistics professor is called in to try to figure out what they're saying to us, and it turns out, twist, it's just Spanish, the whole movie. Anyways, this is a weirdly stupid introduction to a podcast featuring one of the most brilliant guests we've ever had. Hope you enjoy it, and I'll be back at the end for some footnotes. Talk to you then.
Every time I land in London, land of Lincoln all on my mind. I plan a plane and back after playing a pack show in due time. I'm roundabout, I bought a round of English ale for my pals. About to sold an ounce of rubbish, weird to me for like 200 pounds. I think my English getting real, real bad. Cause it's dumb bitch and I'm real, real bad. No spectrum to doom, but I'm real, real good. Dark skin mic, but I still feel bad. I'm a chill, feel addict. I wonder if God's still magic. I wonder if not still magic. Down under the north, it still has it. Why I run around wondering, wondering, pondering life.
I'm joined in studio by Mr. Alex Schmidt.
Hey.
Hey, buddy. How's it going?
It's good.
Thanks for doing this. And we are lucky to be joined in studio by Farah Alibay.
Hi.
How'd I do?
Good.
Awesome. Of the JPL, which, do you want to tell people what that is?
The Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Yeah.
Which I know I have a funny accent, but.
Yeah. That word and aluminium are my two favorite English pronunciations of.
Yeah.
Words.
And the word color. You just know there's
color?
The U there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You can't hear it, but.
It's like, ooh, it sounds so fancy.
And we spell center differently, too. It's R E, not E R.
Oh, yeah.
I actually prefer your spelling.
And Z,
that.
Not Z. Yeah.
That one bothers me. Come on.
What?
Yeah.
Z is a name from Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, I hear it, and I think we're talking about a person suddenly. I'm like,
right.
Who?
We actually did an episode, I think, about the origins of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, Jack Parsons.
Yeah,
that guy was crazy.
Yeah, it was super creepy. It's
right.
Like one of my friend's boyfriends was telling me about it one day, and I was just like, what?
Yeah.
Those are our people? Are you sure?
Yeah, it was like Scientology.
It's
he
LA.
Was hanging out with him. Yeah, it was very LA, a very LA origin story. could you talk about, what you guys do if
okay.
It's not sex magic cult?
No, it's not. We explore the universe, essentially, so that's what we do. But JPL is a NASA center. Actually, our buildings are NASA buildings, but I'm a Caltech employee. So JPL came out of Caltech. basically, quick 2-minute background on how we came to be is that there were some Caltech kids that were trying to build a rocket, and they nearly blew up a building at Caltech, and Caltech was like, hell no, you're not doing that here. They had a piece of land up in the Arroyo, and they were like, go there and do your crazy experiments. So that's how JPL got started. We actually launched our first American satellite in space, which was Explorer. But soon after Explorer, actually, you know, the commercial industries, but first it was the Air Force and the Navy, took over building the rockets. So although we're called a Jet Propulsion Lab, we don't actually build rockets anymore, and we haven't for a very long time. So we actually moved pretty swiftly on from doing rockets to actually just building the actual spacecraft, and then we have someone else build the rockets for us, you know, so we buy the rockets. So we basically have explored most of the bodies in our solar system. We do robotic missions mostly. So most of you all heard of the Curiosity rover, and that's on Mars. That's on Earth. We're the only agency that's ever landed successfully a rover on Mars. But we've had missions to a little bit everywhere in the solar system.
I mean, that's impressive. We're a humor website, but we, you know, I mean, we've done some pretty impressive things. I'm not going to get into all of them, but
we went to like some other planets. Yeah. You haven't heard of them, but they're cool.
I think the guy who we did the last episode on, Jack Parsons, Blue. Am I saying that name wrong, or is that like a sitcom actor?
I think you're saying the name right, and then Jim Parsons is a sitcom actor.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Let's start talking about Jim Parsons. No, I think Jack Parsons blew himself up. How he went out.
And I think Big Bang Theory, they fictionally work at either Caltech or JPL or something like
that. They work at Caltech, yeah.
Okay. So is it like that, mostly?
No. You met me,
Right. You're much more charming.
I mean, there are some people like that, but, you know, people enjoy what they're doing, so.
So what are you guys working on currently?
So we have quite a few missions going on right now. So at any point in time, basically, we'll have spacecraft that are in space and then spacecraft that we're building. So in space right now, we have Juno that's in orbit around Jupiter. It's actually a solar mission around Jupiter, which is pretty good.
What does that mean?
Meaning that for our power source, we're using solar arrays rather than usually we'll use plutonium or nuclear power, because when you're that far out, the sun is like yay big. So you need really big solar arrays. One of my favorite missions is Cassini. It's a spacecraft that's in orbit around Saturn. It's been in orbit around there for, I think it's been going on for like 10 years. It's actually reaching its end of mission. It's going to deorbit it into Saturn in next September. But basically what it did is it did a tour of all the moons around Saturn, discovered that Enceladus has plumes, that Titan has these like methane lakes, and Saturn has a whole bunch of moons, so they're all equally as cool. So that's what's going on in the outer solar system. We have a couple rovers on Mars. Oh, yeah, that's just like, oh, yeah, today.
So that's what's up in the outer solar system.
Yeah, we have a couple rovers on Mars. The Curiosity's still there. And then which one of the two that's still around? Spirit of Opportunity. I think it's Opportunity that's still alive. Spirit died. I should know this. Oh. But, you know, that one, it was a 90-day mission for Spirit and Opportunity, and they lasted like 10 years. So, they're fine. They went past their prime.
Well done.
Yeah. We have MAVEN and MRO and Odyssey and Orbit around Mars. I think that's it. And then we have Dawn. That's a solar electric propulsion mission that's at Ceres right now, which is one of the asteroids in the asteroid belts. And we also do a bunch of other non-planetary exploration missions. So Kepler is one of our missions. We have a few astrophysics-y missions, but I'm less familiar with those. So, you know, looking at the stars and the origins of the universe or whatever.
Yeah, because Kepler's a telescope, right? And it's looking essentially deep into space. That's not a very good way to describe
it. It's weird, right? It's the weirdest thing ever. I always thought telescopes were kind of cool because like you look back in time, essentially, right? So the further space you can see, the farther in time you're seeing, because light takes so long to travel to you that you can see things that are like millions or billions of years old because they take that long to reach you. Right. But it's so faint that you have to be able to see far away. It's not really that far away. It just takes, you have to be able to detect the light. That's why they're saying that, you know, one of the next telescopes that's launching is James Webb Space Telescope, which is actually out of Goddard in DC. They're saying that they might be able to see the origins of like the Big Bang and that original light coming out of that.
That's really cool.
Oh, yeah.
I like that you described it as astrophysics-y. That's a great way to adjectivize that. So I wanted to talk about, just to kind of make this tangible to our listeners, I mean, I totally understand like everything, but our listeners are real dumb. And so what we typically write about when we write about space is, I feel like most people's conception of space is built out of seventh grade science class and movies.
That's my conception. I don't know what you're talking about.
That's what you guys used to. Oh, man. It's like styrofoam planet diagrams and stuff?
Oh, actually, you'd be surprised because I work in mission formulation, so I work on future missions, and we totally have a room where we have like Legos and like styrofoam pieces of things, and then because we'll do like structured brainstorming, which is like very LA again, but we'll actually get to play with toys to like build our space. I mean, we end up building real spacecraft, but I play with styrofoam balls.
That's awesome.
I feel like that's such a movie thing of any movie where it's going to involve some big space mission or space thing. There's always the one scene where it's like, let me break down how the space thing works for you. And they use like a pen and a piece of paper or like a couple models.
Yeah, no, we totally do that. I mean, like a lot of, because I work in mission formation, a lot of my time is actually spent like on a whiteboard drawing pictures of like, oh, this is what it looks like. Or like, let me show you how this orbit works or whatever. Yeah.
Pictionary,
yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. And you'd be, it's actually oddly similar. Some of the work I do is oddly similar to like what Hollywood people do, because part of the ways that we get missions funded at NASA is actually two ways. One way is Congress can say like, you're going to build a mission to Europa, which is what we're doing right now. But they also like have calls where they say, hey, we'll give you $700 million. What can you build for that money? And so you write a proposal.
I hate essentially it when people say that to
me. Yeah, it happens. And then you're competing with other people, but you essentially write a proposal, which is like a book. So it's funny because I have days where I'm actually storyboarding and writing log lines and making graphics. And I'm like, oh, God, this is what? Like, I have friends who are writers and they do that. Why am I doing this? But that's actually it's just how the job works. But yeah.
Now, Europa, that's different than Europe, right? Because I've been to Europe. I can tell you. I have like pictures and stuff I could show you, but it sounds like that's a totally different
thing. That is where I was born.
Let's table that. Yeah, so the way that we typically approach space is just like debunking myths, because most of what everybody knows about it is bullshit. And you actually mentioned something that out where Jupiter is, it's so far away that like the sun is just like a tiny speck from out there. It just looks like a big bright star. And I guess that's one of the first things that I had wrong going into life, adulthood, was just like the scale of things was like totally off. There's this video on the internet where these guys like build a scale model.
Oh yeah, I know those guys.
The solar system,
yep.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah, that was such a great video. So they basically have a sun that is like the size of like one of those yoga balls you sit on at work. You do, Alex, to strengthen your core. You know?
Yeah.
So by comparison, the Earth is like a marble. And then in order to set up like the solar system to scale, they have to like go to this valley in the middle.
They went to, why would they do Burning Man?
Black Rock Desert. Yeah. And they have to like drive around. It's like 7 square miles to get all the way out to Neptune, I think, is.
Yeah, because they didn't do, because you know, Pluto is not a planet anymore.
Right.
Sadly.
Fucking poor Pluto.
Yeah.
But it's really crazy. So if the sun is the size of a yoga ball and the Earth is a marble, you have to go like 2 football fields almost, essentially, away to get to how far away the Earth is from the sun.
Wow.
It's a cool video if you haven't seen it.
Yeah,
it's really good to give you perspective, because it's hard to imagine how small we are.
Yeah.
We're tiny. Meaningless.
Yeah. And maybe we have an impulse to like not think about it too, just because it's like a little bit
and maybe
terrifying in a way.
Maybe don't watch that video. Another thing that I had the scale completely off on, and I think this was caused by Star Wars, is asteroid belts. You mentioned our asteroid belt. And
yeah, things are actually really far away. They're not that close. Like, it's not like you're ducking and weaving in between the asteroids.
Yeah, they make it look like it's like a, I think we describe it as like a stampede, except instead of like cows, it's these giant space rocks flying at you and like you have to dodge in and out.
It's sad.
So our asteroid belt used to be 1,000 times as dense as it is currently, because I guess the asteroids like run into each other and kind of go flying off into space. But even at that density, each asteroid was 400,000 miles away from the next asteroid.
Yeah, like, you're not going to hit them. That's all. We cross that asteroid belt all the time, fairly frequently. There's nothing there. I wish like things were closer because then you could look at them on the way, but no.
Right.
It's just, space is big.
Right.
Yeah, space is, yeah, so space is mostly space. That's the thing, that's kind of boring, right?
And that's the thing, like, I mean, as much as I really want to be an astronaut, like, people don't think about this. I guess if you ever watch, like, 2001 Space Odyssey, they do a good job at showing you how long an empty space travel is. I mean, so much of the movie is so long that I think I've only survived through it once. It's so long.
Right.
It's just like, how do you stay awake? But it's a great movie. But like, I guess that's what Kubrick was going for. Like, but it's true. Like, it's not like you get on a spaceship and like, oh, there's Mars. And like, next thing you know, you're in the asteroid belt. It's like, 6 months later, here's Mars. And a few years later, oh, finally the asteroid belt. It's just mostly empty.
Because even, I'm a big fan of Star Trek, and it makes such a point of like, this is going to be very, a lot of the time it's going to be very philosophical and scientific and so on. I know it's not accurate, but there are a lot of episodes where it'll be like, oh, we're at this place, now we need to get to another place.
Well,
it's like,
they have
great,
like the warp speed thing, so that's not fair.
Yeah, but I feel like on some level they treat it as like, yeah, they're all kind of next to each other, you know? Yeah, like, oh, the station we need, the planet we need, and the third thing. It's all just, you know, nearby.
Yeah,
you
know. It's not. Exactly. I mean, to get to Jupiter, for example, well, I mean, if you go direct, it takes at least 3.5 or 4 years, and most of our space track take around 6 or 7 years to get there. The missions to Saturn can take up to 10 years to get there, depending on what's in the way to help you out.
So, two things I like about 2001 Space Odyssey. One is that was the only movie that got it sort of right about what would happen to you if you were in space without a helmet, in that your face like doesn't explode like it does in Total Recall.
You can technically survive. I mean, not very
basically
long.
Basically go scuba diving in space for like 30 seconds and then you'd get really cold. But
And run out of oxygen.
Right. You know. And also, just a random thing, 2001 A Space Odyssey was the number one movie at the box office the year it came out. It's like, how much America has changed. It's like this like really dense, slow art film. Everyone was like, you got to see it. It's like the
when did it come out?
60s?
60s? Yeah, that sounds right.
Those were the good days. That's like right before the moon landing, right? So those were the heydays.
Well, it's from the time when science fiction, because it's Arthur C. Clarke, right? And it's from the time when science fiction was written where 2001 feels far away. Like, I remember being a kid and reading a Robert Heinlein novel where it opens with a plaque that was put in 1999 at a space base. And I read it in 1999 and I was like, oh, nuts. We didn't do that at all. Oh, man.
So I have a question. You said that, like, you guys travel through the asteroid belt. What is that? No. When something is orbiting, right, is it all on the same level? So Earth is like orbiting here. Why isn't the asteroid belt going
Yeah, it is kind of
degrees.
All in the same plane. So it all is? the planets and the asteroids are within like a few degrees of each other.
Oh, weird.
It has to do with what's dynamically stable. So it's just an energy thing. That's the simplest way of doing it. It's stable that way.
Why do you think you have to use the simplest version to explain
it? Because I don't know how else to explain it.
Right. Oh, interesting.
All the planets, when the solar system formed, right, so the planets accreted, meaning it used to just be a whole big plane of dust. And then with gravity, right, one thing would stick to another, and then that becomes more massive, so it keeps attracting stuff. And so that's how the planets formed. You know, and then they become bigger and hotter in the middle. So that's how you get your planets. And they all formed in that one plane weather. And that's common, right? So if you look at any solar system, they're all usually in a plane like that. And even like the galaxy is a plane. So
the
our
Milky
galaxy,
Way,
so our galaxy has a center and we actually orbit around the center of the galaxy. And that's also a plane. I don't know about the universe. I guess the galaxies orbit around something. Then you're just stretching what I know.
Do you ever think it's like just all in like one guy's
little like
thumb?
Yeah.
No, but think about it, man. A lot of the stuff you guys are doing is looking out into outer space.
Yeah, we also have Earth orbiting missions. So a lot of our work is actually looking at water cycles on Earth. Both in terms of looking at global warming, but also like when El Nino was coming, we could see weather patterns. And also we actually help farmers. So all the data that we produce is public and we make it publicly available. And actually, especially with the Earth science data, we not only make it publicly available, but we'll process it for the public so that like there are websites you can go to. Like if you're a farmer and you care about you know, the amount of water that you're going to have in your land or whatever, you can actually use NASA data. And this actually happened to me when I was in wine tasting in Santa Ynez. One of my friends was wearing a JPL shirt, and the guy who owned the winery was like, whoa, you guys work at JPL? Like, we use your data all the time to know how much water our grapes are going to get and like where the water is on our land and then when to pick our grapes depending on that. And I was like, oh, there you go.
But like in terms of color, this is something that kind of blew my mind. Basically, all of the colors that we have seen are mostly added after the fact to pictures of space.
Yeah, well, so a lot of the time the spacecraft will only fly a monochrome camera, or we don't always image things in the light, the visible light, right? So a lot of our spacecraft actually will image in either IR or X-ray, or the telescopes mostly actually will look at X-ray and even smaller wavelengths. So yeah, a lot of the color is added afterwards based on the wavelengths that we're getting, basically. So yeah, like the sun isn't really yellow or...
Yeah, the sun's white.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because it's so hot, it glows white. But you'll see pictures of, like, if you Google pictures of the sun from NASA, like, they'll have blue ones, but those are just in X-ray. And then they'll have, like, IR pictures in red, so... It's only white because it has every color.
And Pluto is red. I was surprised to
hear that. Yeah, that I didn't know until they posted pictures from New Horizons, right?
Well, because I remember...
Well, no one had ever seen Pluto before.
Mars is red, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Still got
Well,
that
you can see from a telescope almost.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And the moon's kind of gray.
I am familiar with that one. Thanks.
Making sure.
I've seen that one.
Are you sure?
Was that, and also Jupiter, because I've heard of the red storm on Jupiter, is that actually red? Or is that just sort of how we're perceived and told it?
No, I think it is. I think Jupiter looks the way we, like it's reddish, yellowish. But, you know, it's not one of those things I spend much time thinking about.
Because also I read on... from our site, that Jupiter's has sort of bands of color on its surface, and those will shift around from time to time.
I think those are the weather patterns. Yeah. So well, it has to do with like how the different gases are distributing around Jupiter. Jupiter has some like weird ass storms, but
yeah, the red spot is like an enormous storm that's like three Earths across, right?
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, if people haven't seen a GIF of Jupiter in motion, they should totally look at that, because like for all my education, I had only seen like still pictures of it. But then when you see it, it's like really cool looking in motion. Yeah. Like this.
They have massive storms on Jupiter and like lightning and
Yeah. Do we still not know what's powering the storm, or is that?
We know a little bit about the composition and the energy patterns, but not, you know, we actually know very little about the planets in our solar system. So with Jupiter, there was a mission called Galileo that got launched to Jupiter in the 90s. And it basically looked at the different moons of Jupiter, figured out that Europa had an ocean. And I'm sure the NASA website knows more than I do at this point. Because it's not, it's funny because when you work in space, often you'll be very specialized in certain areas. So I do work with asteroids. I do work with icy bodies. So those are like the icy moons. And I know like a little bit about Mars, a little bit about Venus. But it's sort of like you kind of pick and choose what you know about.
Do you have a favorite moon?
Oh, yeah, of course I do.
you got so excited.
What? Look, it's on my phone even. Like, this is how much I love it.
What is it?
It's called Enceladus. It's one of the moons of Saturn. It's actually smaller than our moon, and it's an icy moon. So basically, it has a global ocean and an icy shell. But the coolest thing about it is that at the South Pole, it has these geysers, which we call plumes. So it's basically spewing out water into space. But because of the energy patterns that it gets from, so it's orbiting around Saturn. So Saturn transfers energy to it through like the gravitational pull. And because it has water and a global ocean, we think it's actually one of the places in our solar system where there might be life.
Oh, wow. That's
and the awesome. Coolest thing is we can go there and just, you know, fly through the plumes and pick up the water and see if there's signs of life in it. We don't have to drill or land. So it's actually a really easy target if we're going to find life in our solar system. So go to Enceladus.
It's like a water volcano like, that shoots it so like, high it goes into space.
Yeah, it's like the Old Faithful, but in the space. Well, because there's no atmosphere. So if there was no atmosphere around Earth and Earth was a lot smaller,
right?
Then gravity is a lot smaller. So it's about the same force, but it's just spewing straight out into space. It's actually like some of it snows back down.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, it must be really pretty.
Yeah.
There.
Actually, Enceladus is also the brightest object on our solar system because it's white and it's really bright because it reflects light. But...
even though it's so far from the sun, it's just bouncing off
so much.
Yeah,
it's reflecting light from Saturn, and yeah, it's the brightest object.
That's a good favorite moon.
Yep.
I mean, I think it's a little weird that our moon is not your favorite moon.
It's pretty dead.
Traitor.
There's like nothing on it. There's an American flag, I guess.
The best
There's
flag.
Some water.
We wrote about how the world used to be obsessed with quicksand back in the 60s. That was just like a thing that like was always in movies and TV shows. And when they were about to land on the moon, an AP reporter asked the astronauts if they were worried that it was quicksand. That was like a legit question.
Well, they also thought that, like, you know, the astronauts, when they came back from the moon, they had to quarantine them for a while because they were like, oh, they could be diseased from the moon. And right. then very fast, they were like, oh, no, there's nothing there.
And then they licked them to see if it was like Cheeto dust.
It was very dusty. Word to fight for gonna bring it to the overlord. Drinking Cisco, chilling with the gold microphone cords. And we grip our balls every time we stuntin' on tour. Cause we never bore. Responding to the ready crowds roar. And promoters try to hit us with the audible. We about our business, we not quitters, not bullshitters. We deliver, we go get us. Don't be bitter, cause we not just niggas. Jerobi, my fire woven to different cloth. Ain't
nothing forbidden. The syndicate is written off. Hey guys, we're listening to Space Program, which is the first track off the stellar new Tribe Called Quest album, Interstellar. Still got it. I hadn't listened to much Tribe since the 90s, and this past week has been a lot of fun going back into Midnight Marauders and some of my favorite Tribe songs. Anyways, great song, great album. Hope you enjoy it, and then enjoy these words from our sponsor. Cracking off a spear and off, quickly turn a Molotov. Molotov the spaceship door before that bitch is taken off. It always seems the poorest persons, the people forsaken dog, the Washington's, Jefferson's, Jackson's on the captain's log. They'd rather leave us to the gray and water poison deli smog. Glass unblackening, it's happening. You feel it, y'all? I'd rather see we need 3x3 structure with many bars. Leave us where we are so they can play among the stars. We're taking off the Mars, got the space vessels overflowing. What you think they want us there? All us niggas not going. This episode of the Cracked Podcast is sponsored by Movement Watches. Movement Watches are stylish, classy watches that don't cost the hundreds of dollars you usually pay for a nice watch at a department store or watch store or black market cockfighting ring. There are Movement Watches for both men and women, and they start at just $95, meaning, yeah, you don't have to saw off and pawn your own arm in order to afford it. That completely negates the point of having a watch, by the way. And here's some free advice to everyone scrambling for gift ideas this time of year. Movement sells these really amazing gift boxes. They come with a watch, an extra band for your watch, and a pair of really cool sunglasses. They're just well-designed watches and glasses. Anyways, check them out at mvmtwatches.com/cracked. Once you're there, you'll get free shipping and 15% off your purchase. So step up your watch game once again at mvmtwatches.com/cracked. This episode of the Cracked Podcast is also brought to you by Squarespace. Whether you need a landing page, a beautiful gallery, a professional blog, or an online store, it's all included with your Squarespace website. The ease at which you'll be able to design your own website in minutes is one of Squarespace's best features. All the features are very elegantly and simply designed, and when you're done, your website will just work, not only on desktop browsers, but every kind of mobile browser as well, which chances are, depending on what you do, is how people will be reading it. They also have a new feature that will help you design your own logo for your website. You're basically going to feel like that gif of Zach Galifianakis from The Hangover with math equations whizzing by his face. That's how much of a genius you're going to feel like when you're done designing your website with Squarespace. So start your free trial today with no credit card required at squarespace.com and enter offer code CRACKED to get 10% off your first purchase. Again, that's squarespace.com and enter offer code CRACKED. Squarespace, set your website apart. Sitting wonder sometimes, I read the paper every day. All these happenings are secular, just happen different ways. And the president's refined in her wings, she's confined with about 30 Percocets and 5 bottles of wine. Carolina, nothing finer than a black woman who climbs to the top of the state building, claiming that their flag is mine. Now, people on top of people feels like we can't breathe. Put so much in this motherfucker, feel like we shouldn't leave. Put it on TV, put it in black holes. I had always heard The gossip, the hot goss, was that black holes were like vacuum cleaners that just like sucked everything in. And that's true, apparently.
No.
You're looking at me with such pity.
It depends on the mass of the black hole, right? So, so you can actually orbit a black hole. So you could replace our sun with a black hole that's like the same size. And I mean, it'd be cold, but you would be orbiting.
Right. We would freeze to death, but the planet Earth would still keep going around.
Yeah, because the movie Interstellar has a planet or two that's orbiting a black hole, I think. And I was curious watching that, like, is that a thing?
So actually, one of the interesting things with Interstellar is that, so sometimes movies, like, vaguely try to do a good job sometimes. So they, if you, like, are writing movies, you can contact JPL and they will give you someone to help you out.
Oh, no way.
But, yeah, actually, I've been helping out one of my friends with his movie. I have another friend who's a writer and he was just like, no. I don't want your help. I don't want any of this to be real.
You
and I was
everything.
Yeah, basically, I was like, can I post one thing that's real? And he was like, no, Hollywood does not like real things. And I was like, well, fine. We're not friends anymore. But no, so within Interstellar, actually, they had some Caltech scientists actually help out. And the really cool thing with it is that, so the view of a black hole that you see in Interstellar is actually, at the time, was our best representation ever scientifically of a black hole, because Interstellar gave them research money to go do that research to analyze data that they had to like represent a black hole, and they ended up publishing a bunch of science papers on that. So
that's cool.
Awesome. Yeah. So it's actually like fairly, I mean, other than the like the love thing and the falling through the thing, you know,
Is that part true?
Sure. See, like in my mind, when he was falling through, up until then, I was like, okay, there's like weird things, they come through a wormhole, but fine, like close enough. And then that shit happened, and I was like, really? Love? Are you kidding me? There's no such thing.
Right. But there's a series of bookcases in space, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah. That was so dumb. Sorry.
Well, I also think that movie's phenomenal as like a piece of art, and like I think most people on staff here disagree with me completely. But
well, no, but there's a lot of people who will be like, no man, you don't get it. I'm like, I get it. It's
but, awful. Right. That's what it is. There's nothing to get. It's terrible.
Just but the it's bookcases great. Thing. Just the bookcases thing. Well, I was like, why is there fucking bookcases?
It always has to do with emotions rather than science.
Is that something that is difficult for you,
like, what, feelings?
Yeah. As a scientist, do you just have no feelings?
It's getting real. It's getting real.
No, like, I grew up around basketball, and so I can't watch most movies about basketball because they just look ridiculous. Like, you can tell the people have never played basketball before. Is that sort of all sci-fi for you?
You learn to like shut your brain off. There are things to be appreciated from it, right? And so if you look at it as a piece of art or a movie and you go in thinking like, this is gonna just not be perfect, then you're okay. So, I mean, there are movies that do better than others. Like, The Martian's pretty close. Spoiler alert, right? Like, there's a whole premise is that this, like, spacecraft launching back from Mars and it, like, is almost about to tip over. Yeah, the whole premise for that is not real. There are storms on Mars, but then no one is strong enough to push over a MAV, the vehicle that big. Oh. And then, you know, NASA's not stupid, and so they probably wouldn't design something that would just fall over like that. So, you know, the whole premise of the movie basically is flawed. But other than that, you know, a lot of things are actually vaguely true. So there are things like that are close enough. Interestingly enough, actually, one of the missions I work on, so I'm working on this crazy-ass mission where we're going to an asteroid and grabbing a boulder. But by boulder, it's like a 20-ton boulder, so it's like three times the size of the room we're in right now. It's a big-ass rock.
We're in a room the size of, like, most basketball coliseums, just for people to visualize.
It's, like, smaller than my closet. Right. But in fact, I'm like, am I going to get murdered?
Yeah.
But
We really record in a creepy room, you guys.
Yeah, it's like no windows. They lock the door. Right. They told me to like sign a waiver.
We have plastic up on the walls like Dexter.
They're wearing gloves.
We have Halloween music playing until right before we start taping. So really creepy.
But we use ion propulsion. So basically the way our thrusters look, instead of it being like normal chemical propulsion, we accelerate xenon. So they glow bright blue. And so one of the cool things is if you watch like Star Wars or Star Trek, like a TIE fighter is a twin ion engine, right? So they glow blue, and that's exactly what all thrusters look like. So actually they beat us in terms of like
Oh, wow.
So sometimes, huh. Yeah, sometimes, especially movies from like the 60s and 70s, like a lot of that stuff like now is becoming very true. And yeah, that's really what they look like. So there we go. They're not always wrong. But actually, I think for Star Trek, they actually made an effort for it to be vaguely true.
Yeah.
The guys were visionaries.
I've heard people say that like the dogfighting in space wouldn't look like that because there's no gravity there. So you wouldn't be like swooping around because you can't really swoop. Because there's no air.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Did I just ruin Star Wars for you? I
thought. Yeah. I'm trying to think. Well, I mean, they wouldn't swoop, but you could still like navigate relative to each other.
That's true.
So yeah. So it wouldn't quite look the same. Oh, I never thought about that.
Because those dogfights didn't Lucas like he looked at footage of movies about World War II aerial fights, and he was just like, let's do that in space. So I don't think he was thinking about
quite, like, I think visually it wouldn't quite look the same. You could have the concept of dogfighting, right? But it's just like kind of a little different because when you're orbiting around Earth, or like if you have your plane going around the Earth, there's only really one, you're orbiting, so there's only one direction you can like kind of go in,
right?
Yeah. And there's up and down, so you don't really have that in space. Because there is no up and down. So I guess your perspective would be kind of all messed up. Or like you could just be like, oh, I'm going to go the other way. But then they would follow you, I guess.
That's the thing I think I would find most confusing about space, in addition to all the math and
the lack of
just
gravity.
Everything. But the fact that there's no up or down, that seems like that would really fuck
with you. Well, so if you're orbiting around Earth, right, then at least, like, I guess down is Earth because you're still orbiting.
Yeah, that's
true. The ISS is, like, there's still kind of, I mean, if there's a window, you know where up and down is. You don't really when you're just hanging out, you know, from the extensive experience I have. But yeah, it would be kind of messed up. No, I think you get used to it eventually, but that's also why astronauts get sick when they first go into space is because your ears and your eyes are telling you different things the same way as when you get car sick. So there's space sickness because like your ears are what give you balance on Earth, right? And then your brain just goes into overdrive and it goes crazy because it's like, oh, I have no concept of what's up and down. My ears are like not telling me where this is. So my instinct is to just throw everything up.
And I've also heard that your nose kind of loses, if you're in space, your nose sort of loses track of what anything smells like, and then that throws off your sense of taste quite a bit.
Yeah, I heard that. I don't quite know what the mechanism is behind that, but it probably, again, has to do with the lack of gravity and things not quite being going into your brain rate. But
if you guys haven't looked at pigeons in space in zero gravity, they're so funny looking. They just like lose their shit.
Who brought pigeons in space?
You guys, I guess, or some scientists.
I don't think that was
spiders
us.
Also look really funny.
And they just kind of like blow up a little bit.
No, they're like scrambling. They're like, what the fuck is going on?
It's like
a physical embodiment of like basically what you described the brain as doing. Like they're just like freaking out,
crap.
Yeah.
Well, because that sense of direction thing for any species on Earth, that seems like a really real thing. Like as far as fiction about space, I've always felt like Ender's Game does a pretty good job with it because throughout their training as kids and their training to fight, which we aren't for the most part in space, but throughout their training, they're constantly reminding themselves of just the concept of up and down and how that works and how to like figure out what it is because you just have to make your brain realize what's going on.
Yeah, that's true. Although in Ender's Game, they have artificial gravity, right? Most of the time when they're on their ship.
Yeah.
So they have that up and down. But then it's like the opposite that when they're fighting, then there's no up and down and they can play around with that.
Yeah, and there's just gates that they're going after. And so it's like football, but if you had no sense of anything.
So you said that you guys are doing like a thing with asteroids. Is it similar to the movie Armageddon? Like basically exactly like?
I'm basically female Bruce Willis, yeah.
Oh, really?
Congratulations. No. That's amazing.
So actually what we're doing is, so this mission, so we're grabbing this like massive boulder and bringing it back into lunar orbit, and then we're going to send astronauts to like mine it. But there's two reasons two reasons why we're doing that mission. One of them is actually to demonstrate something called a gravity tractor, which is a way to deflect asteroids that's kind of safe. If you know that, you know, well ahead of time that this asteroid might be on a collision course with Earth, what you can do is you send a spacecraft, and so your spacecraft becomes of like a comparable mass to the asteroid. Not really, right? It's maybe a thousandth or like a millionth of the size of the asteroid. Yeah. But Newton's second law, right? Like, so you have gravity. The same way as when you're on Earth is pulling you down, but you're pulling up on Earth a little bit. just from your mass, right? But you're so small compared to the size of the Earth that you make no difference. But if you're a thousandth or a millionth of the mass of something else, then you have some pull. And so you can use the mass of the spacecraft to deflect the asteroid ever so slightly, which like a tiny deflection now, 20 years from now, can propagate into you missing the Earth rather than hitting it. So we are actually demonstrating that. That's one of the key parts of the mission is planetary defense is what we call it. And then the other is that we're showing if you can grab a 20-ton boulder and like move it around space using our solar electric propulsion is what we're using, then you can think that's a stepping stone for Mars, right? So we're demonstrating a lot of the technology that you'd need because you can think like, oh, that could be a 20-ton habitat or that could be food and water and stuff that we need to go to Mars. So we're basically demonstrating that system by also providing, you know, something for the astronauts to go to and like close to Earth, but beyond Earth orbit kind of area. So it's a technology demonstration mission, but it's a lot of fun. And it has a lot of different goals that really are stepping stone for wherever we end up wanting to go in a solar system.
So you wouldn't need an offshore drilling team to go up there?
No. No.
Talk about the wrong stuff is my favorite line from any movie. It's from Armageddon.
Behind the scenes of that movie, didn't Ben Affleck like go up to Michael Bay and say, hey, why would they even need these people? And Michael was just like, we're making a movie, Ben. Yeah, just chill out.
Just shut up.
Shut up.
It's an actual...
Right. Why not just teach the astronauts how to drill? Shut up. I think that's exactly how the conversation went.
See, that's why my friends don't let me help them with that movie. It's because that's... Right. They're like, stop being logical.
Right.
Need movie.
I'm told that the scene where the meteors in that movie come down and like hit cities like nuclear bombs is not accurate, that like they're not flaming hot things.
Yeah, it doesn't. Well, I mean, like most of the things will like burn up on entry, and it was oddly convenient that they all hit cities, and also they wouldn't really hit at that angle. It's all sorts of messed up, that movie, but.
What angle would they hit at?
Like parabolically. And yeah, they're also not piping hot. I mean, they'll go through the atmosphere and they get super hot, but only on the surface. It doesn't like...
Right, because they're like freezing cold, right?
Yeah.
Because space is cold.
Yeah. Yeah, so they do get hotter on re-entry and you will get like that flame around them. And then when they crash, they'll like just create a big crater.
They don't blow up buildings like...
I mean, they could if it hit a building, right?
Right.
Yeah, but it's just, it was oddly convenient that they hit all of these important places. But
right, yeah.
Right.
Like, oh.
Like directly through the spine of Big Ben or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's interesting.
Like, yeah. It's like the odds are, you know, usually when meteorites or asteroids hit the Earth or smaller things, I mean, we get things hit all the time. That's what, you know, shooting stars are. I mean, they usually end up in the ocean. That's what we mostly have. And
right,
sometimes they hit Russia, but like, yeah.
That's the only other option.
Well, there was one that hit Russia recently, but you know, it was tiny.
Yeah.
It hit the building.
I like how casually you were just like, it hits all the time. Hey, you know,
well,
it's,
yeah.
Hey, come on.
What do you think shooting stars are? I mean, they kind of go
wishes.
Through the atmospheres and disintegrate. But.
Yeah.
Just my favorite video in a long time was Russians reacting to that like it was no big deal. The meteor just like striking and like things blowing up, or like seeing it like streaking across the sky. And the guy's like just driving and like changes the channel on his radio. Russians are so unflappable.
Because apparently it's very common they have dash cams in their cars, right? So
right.
Just everybody was recording it. And then they were just like, what else is on?
Right. Oh. Yeah. One thing that I didn't realize was that comets' tails aren't actually behind the comet always.
Yeah, so they're actually pushed by the sun. Okay, so there's a weird thing. The sun has something called solar wind. So that has a pressure force that we actually have to counteract when we have our spacecraft in space. And so also comet's tail, what's the tail? It's basically ice that's burning up, right? It's just melting and that's what's behind it. So it's usually water. And so basically, usually the tail is like in the opposite direction to where the sun is, depending on where your orbit is around the sun. So yeah, it's never just behind it.
Right.
Well, I mean, I guess there's one point.
It is when it's going towards
it. Yeah, it is at one point in orbit, but then usually it's kind of canted. Yeah, that is a weird thing to think about, but it's true.
When you're traveling away from the sun, it would like look like a headlight. It's just, it'll be going in front of it.
And then solar wind does not make space hot. Does not help with that.
No. Okay. Solar wind is just particles that are coming out of the sun all the time that pushes. But that's a different process from what's happening on comets. Comets just, they're just, because, if the sun's behind you, the heat's coming from behind you from the sun. So it's pushing the sublimation particles away from the sun, basically.
I think it's underutilized or something I haven't seen utilized in sci-fi movies. And maybe Star Trek has done something with this, but the fact that like the length of the days on different planets are like kind of
arbitrary?
Basically arbitrary. Yeah. Like Jupiter, the days are
like... I think it's
like
an 8 or 9 hour day that spins really fast. But then Mars, a day on Mars is just a little longer. So it's really annoying. So it has a year on Mars is 2 Earth years. And then a sol is like slightly longer than an Earth day. So when we, for example, when we land spacecraft on Mars at the beginning, we'll work with the day because, you know, you want to drive during the day and look at stuff when it's bright out. So especially the first few months of a mission, all of our staff that's working on a mission will work on Martian time, which is fine. Like your day like slowly shifts by an hour every day. Yeah. So that, but it sucks because eventually like Mars daytime becomes Earth nighttime. And so, cause you're like slightly pushing your schedule every day. Cause your day's like a 25-ish hour day. And it's really annoying.
Yeah. No, I hate daylight savings time too. I get it. We have employees on the East Coast and time difference. Am I right?
I got into that argument today at work. Cause I work with people on the East Coast. Cause we work with other NASA centers. So we have a 9 a.m. meeting and they're like, well, that's lunchtime for us. And I was like, bring your lunch. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you.
Venus has a day that is 243 Earth days. So it's,
oh, I didn't know that. That is super slow.
That would be a great setting for a vampire movie. It would be like a year-long night.
You could probably walk, like keep walking and always be in daytime.
Right.
Because it's like, because it's moving so slowly.
That'd be an easy thing to do. But Or vampires. Vampires
could,
could stay at night.
The opposite way around.
Because there's that one vampire movie set in Alaska and they use like the midnight sun as a thing.
Right,
so, like,
exactly.
You just max that out. Just do it on Venus.
Right.
And then there's like planets that rotate the other way from the Earth, right? So.
What?
They rotate the same way around the sun, but they rotate the other way about their axis.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I had no idea.
And there's some that don't spin. They spin like flat. Some of them don't. Their spin axis is also not all the same for all the planets. So.
Is that Uranus? Is that why that one has the ring that's...
Yeah. So it's like got a flat axis and then it might also be retrograde. A couple of them are, but they spin the wrong way. Not the wrong way, it's just the other way.
I recently learned that Mercury does spin because I had been reading The Sirens of Titan by Kurt Vonnegut. And in that, Mercury doesn't turn, he says. It's just like one side is facing the sun and one isn't.
Yeah, so
just
actually
like
the
that,
coldest place in the solar system is the dark side of Mercury. And then one of the hottest places is the hot side of Mercury.
Really?
So like, it just always faces the sun the same way.
Sort of like the moon and Earth.
Yeah,
tidally
exactly.
Locked.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
But Mercury does rotate, right? Like it does.
Well, it has to...
To keep its face at the sun.
Yeah. So, because otherwise, if it wasn't rotating, then the hot side would be hot sometimes and cold sometimes. It just rotates in such a way that the hot side is always hot.
Got it.
And just to confirm, planets have faces, right? I was right when I said that.
And sure.
There is no dark side of the moon. There's a side of the moon.
Yeah, it's dark.
That we don't see.
Yeah.
Well, it's not
dark,
darker, right?
No, yeah, it's not dark. It's just on the other side.
It's just on the other side. We just don't get to see it.
It's dark from our perspective, I guess.
Right, exactly. Subjectively, it's dark.
It's like when they landed on the moon, right? So there were three guys that went to the moon. One didn't land. He stayed in the ship to like wait for the other two guys.
What a loser. What's that guy's name? Exactly.
Oh, no, now I'm like, shit, I do know his name.
You do?
He'll come back to me. Do you know?
Michael Collins.
Michael Collins, there we go.
That sounds like the name of like some lounge singer or something.
But basically, there's this thing where he was like, they call him the loneliest man in the universe. I think there was a song where they called him
Grand Control to Major Tom.
There's also that song, one of my favorite songs. So he, you know, the dudes land on the moon and he's just waiting in the spacecraft that's orbiting the moon, but it passes over to the far side of the moon. So at that point, he loses comm with Earth. He can't talk to anyone. There is no one, no noise, nothing. It's just him alone in this spacecraft, hoping that like he will emerge out the other side. I mean, he will. Astrodynamics tell you that, but like,
what if he hadn't? We would have been like, whoa.
Yeah, or if he just died for no reason. Right. It's like, oh, what's on the far side of the moon?
Or came back haunted.
Well, it's like, have you guys seen that movie where like there's like a Nazi base on the far side of the moon? Oh, best movie ever. I can't remember what it's called. Okay, so I love like shitty movies, but no, this a movie
doesn't sound like it qualifies at all.
Oh, it's
Nazi
like,
moon base?
There's like a Nazi. No, how like, okay. Now
Transformers 3?
No. I'm going to look it up. There is a movie.
There was a horror movie. It was like Apollo 19 or something. And they all like get eaten or something.
It's by Moon Iron Rocks. Sky. Yeah. There we go.
Iron Sky.
Okay, if you haven't seen it, it's so good.
Yeah. Sounds pretty good. The moon looks pretty big on the poster to the film Iron Sky. Is it
true?
Well,
they're on the moon in that movie.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, the like Nazi base on the moon. Great.
Yeah, what if he had been like going over the far side of the moon and just like saw like a bunch of people partying down there or something? He's the only person who's ever seen it. Did he say anything? Did people ask him like, what's it look like?
You know what? I bet people didn't care and they just asked Buzz and Neil what happened.
Right.
No, I'm sure he did.
His mic wasn't
turned
on.
Probably was like, it's quiet. I don't know. But see, as it turns out, he had to be like the smartest of them because he's the one that has to save them if something happens, right? So like he's the one.
Right.
That has to. So, I mean, it's a big job. It's just, and then they had chosen Neil to be the first one to set foot on the moon because Buzz is an interesting character. I've met him a few times.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Oh, cool.
I mean, it gets to be. Dude walked on the moon. Obviously, he's going to be like, whatever. Very smart man, but a very interesting character. Yeah. He's been divorced a few times.
Yeah.
He once went on a double date with one of my friends.
Oh, really?
Meaning he's friends with one of my friends because they work together, or he does. My friend does work for him. And so said friend was going on a date. Might have been a first date. And Buzz was like, oh, I'll come with you. I'll bring my girlfriend. And he's like, that's bound to impress her.
Right.
Did not go over so well.
That's bound to impress her.
I mean, what would you do if you went on a first date and like someone brought Buzz Aldrin? I mean, that'd be like, oh, hey, dude. But like,
yeah.
It's LA. Most people don't care.
Right. Have you been in any movies?
Yeah. He was in 30 Rock, right?
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I know somebody who met him at the Webby Awards. It's just like, okay, yeah, right. Of course that's where you meet Buzz Aldrin.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Is it true that most spacecraft will not have windows? Because why would they? That there's not that much
to see. No, they would. Yeah, because, okay, well, robotic spacecrafts, which is what I work on, don't have windows because, I mean, there's no point.
But how do the robots see?
With the cameras. They all have cameras too. So one of the things is like, no, they do have windows because if you're an astronaut, it's kind of cool to like see outside. In fact, the ISS has this really cool window that they installed recently. It's called the cupola, which is like this round window. And like the astronauts like can go in it and they can see like 180 degrees of space. And there's some really cool pictures out of that too. Yeah, so I feel like most spacecraft, like, you would have windows because it's not like there's nothing to see. There's stars and stuff. And so. Mm-hmm. And actually, with the moon landings, they needed the windows because, like, they were actually navigating. Like,
sight?
Yeah. I mean, when they landed on the moon, when Buzz and Neil were landing, they were looking and they were like, we're going to land over there. Like, so, you know, it was, like, assisted. But the computer that they had was, like, more shitty than my iPhone's computer, which is, like, when I complain about it being slow. I feel bad, but
your iPhone is from the future, though, we should say.
Yeah. So they would literally kind of like look out the window and they had like this little tape measure that they would be like, literally they had a little rule on the window to like figure out what elevation they were at. Oh, yeah. Like no
history.
One would never let us do that now. It's like if you said like, yeah, I'm not going to give you anything. You got to figure it out.
Right.
Go land on this other planet.
Here's a compass and a protractor. Figure it out.
Pretty much. Yeah. It's like, what?
Yeah. Well, it's almost like, oh, I feel like we're picking on a lot of things in movies that are fake, but that feels like the real version of like, Luke, you turned off your targeting computer. He's like, it's fine. I have it. Like, that's that. Like, it's just like, nah, I can see it. Yeah.
But yeah, cool. Nowadays we actually like rely on computers. But
mm-hmm. That's smart.
Yeah.
Smart of you
They're
guys.
Smarter than we are. A little bit faster too.
Right.
Plus like no one knows how to do long divisions anymore. So there's that.
Right.
Yeah.
I fall into that category. So when they launched to the moon, did they just like kind of lick their finger and like aim and then just like launch in the general direction?
No. Okay. We plan trajectories well ahead of time. And actually, it's interesting because I always say that we have like celestial deadlines. So for example, to be optimal in energy, you can only launch to Mars every 2 years. So there's a 1 month launch window every 2 years where you can launch to Mars. So that's why like the next one is going to be in like May of 2018. The last one was in March of 2016. So it's about every 26 months. If you launch at any other time, you just take so much energy to get there or you'd miss Mars or whatever. So we have people called mission designers, and that's their job to figure out when the planets align. And depending on the amount of propulsion you have and the amount of mass that you're bringing, you can literally trace your path. So it's like they're Google mappers, but we don't have Google maps with space. So
right.
And it's a little bit harder because things have to phase properly and planets move. Like imagine if San Francisco kept moving and you just had to like hit it just right.
Yeah, I feel like that would be really hard because like, yeah, if you're in orbit and you're trying to steer towards something moving forward, the faster you go, the further out of orbit you would go. And then, like, you slow down, you would have to...
Yeah. So the Earth orbits around the sun. Mars orbits around the sun, but they don't go at the same speed. So when we launch from Earth to go to Mars, we're going to target a point where we know Mars will be. But we don't target Mars. We target this empty point in space.
Right.
And then Mars catches up to us from behind. And then we slow down. That's how we land on Mars. So we actually like get into Mars orbit just ahead of it. Huh. And then it catches up with us and then we slow down. And so that's actually how it works. We don't go chasing after it.
It's like a good quarterback leading the receiver. We always use sports metaphors because our audience is super sportsy.
Oh, it's okay. I like sports too. So
it's almost like it made me think of
it is like a quarterback. If you threw a ball and you know the receiver is going to be over there, and you just have to know that your receiver is going over there.
Right.
A little bit more predictable than the receiver.
It sounds like we like get in front of Mars and let it. It's like Yakov Smirnov, like Mars land on you. You know,
it's like we slow down. Like we slow down to get into the same orbit. So it's essentially we impact it, but. You know, softly.
Yeah.
Something that someone pointed out, I think, in one of our articles is the idea that if something went wrong with a spaceship that was like traveling to Mars or something, rather than
turning around,
stranded in space or whatever, they would keep going
forever. So first off, you can't just stop and turn around when you're in space. Right? That takes a lot of energy. So say you're on your way to Mars and like all your engines die, then like you'll just keep going forever because you're already going at like a certain velocity, right? Now what you could do is if you get close enough to Mars, you can use Mars gravity to like slingshot yourself and come back. So but yeah, if you're on your way to Mars, like past the moon already, and something went wrong and you had to come back, the only way to come back is to go all the way to Mars and back again. It's kind of what they did in Apollo 13, right? They were on their way to the moon, and then shit went wrong. And they can't just, like, put the brakes on, turn around, and come back.
Right.
Like, that's not how physics works. So they actually went all the way to the moon, spun around the moon, used the gravity from the moon to, like, slingshot themselves, and then came back to Earth. So that's what you'd do.
That's what I'd do.
Which sucks, definitely. Right? Like, if your spacecraft's broken, and you're like, shit. I got to make it all the way to Mars and back again before I can come back home. It's no fun.
Yeah, that would be a lot of downtime. You were saying about your taste buds not working very well and that like Tabasco is like gold when you're in
really?
Space.
Oh, really? Because like you can't taste anything?
Like on the ISS, they're so like, you better have brought Tabasco, motherfucker, when people like dock with them.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
apparently that is the one taste they develop like a crazy craving for, is spicy anything. Yeah.
It's like when you have a cold, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, also, they've brought flowers into space, and then the flowers don't know how to make the smell they'd usually make, so they just smell different because they're like zero gravity is just.
Well, is it that they smell different or that we can't smell the same thing? So, how do you know?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, right? I actually don't know.
Right?
Could go either way.
I guess maybe if like you smell it as soon as you get there, like so you haven't been there long enough, but
or maybe
still.
They have like those smelling computer things, right? Don't they have
is that
like
a
those
thing?
Things? Yeah, I think so.
That would
like drugs.
That's probably it. Yeah, yeah.
I want to ask you what's like the mystery about our solar system and then just space in general that you're like most excited to see solved.
Are we
think
alone?
Will be solved.
I think that's one of the big. Well, I mean, hopefully we'll solve it, and because we can only solve it if the answer is no, right? Because you'll never know if the answer is yes. But it's this weird thing that like. The way it works out, because there's so many planets and so many other solar systems in our universe, that if we find life in one place in our universe, then we know that the whole universe is full of life, right? Because statistically, if you find it in two places, you're good. It's everywhere.
Right.
But right now, we don't know that. So actually, that's one of NASA's big goals, is to figure that out. And so we have a lot of targets within the solar system that could have life. They think Mars might have had life in the past. A lot of the reason why I like icy moons and Enceladus or Europa is because they're really great targets for what we call astrobiology, which is biology and other planets. So I think that's one of the coolest things I really care about, because it's just like, isn't that like the fundamental question that we ask ourselves?
Right.
Like, where do we come from? And are we alone? Because it'd be interesting too, right? Because we don't know what these other forms of life look like. So NASA usually looks for life as we know it. So that's why we look for things in water. We look for hydrocarbons. We look for certain proteins, essentially. But there's also a place like Titan, which has methane lakes, right? But it could be that there's methane-based life on Titan, right? So, and we're just starting to learn about life even in our own planet. There's places on Earth where we never thought there could be life. We found like cyanide-based life, right? So there's places on Earth where we never thought there could be life, and there is. And interestingly enough, there's places on Earth where there's like absolutely no life either. Like, we found places where we would have expected there to be something, and there's like jack shit. And so it's kind of really interesting how little we know about where we came from. But if we can find another type of life, then that might give us an understanding of what creates life, right? Because we think, you know, we think we need energy, water, food, whatever, you know, Netflix, but clearly, but we don't actually know, right? We could just, that could just be the way that we happen to be. Oh, we could be alone, and then it's really sad. But hopefully that's not the case.
Well, we'll never know if that is the case.
I wish to believe we're not.
I'd never heard that sort of explanation, that even if we find like some very basic form of life or evidence of life, that will just be evidence that, okay, there's probably...
Yeah, isn't like Drake's equation or something? Is that what it is? Something like that.
There's good an equation. Rapper.
Yeah. There's an equation. There is an equation. But, you know, is it Drake's equation? Yes. But basically, it's in that movie Contact. They explain it very badly, but they do explain it. And then they have sex, I think. That's what happens. I'm pretty sure that's what happens in that movie. And then I was like, what the hell? but it's basically like, if you take like the number of galaxies that there are in the universe, and then the number of, it's all probabilities, but basically it's saying like, if you take the number of planets that could be habitable and blah, 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 it's a bunch of factors that come into that. Mm-hmm. And then there's like a probability of like that being life and intelligent life or whatever. And there's like a probability of that being life. But there's probability terms in that equation that we don't know. But basically, the way it turns out is if we find one other planet with life at all, then like probabilistically, life's everywhere.
And even with just finding life kind of like ours on Earth, like when Proxima B was a big story, I was reading a story about that said, the Kepler telescope found that 22% of sun-like Milky Way stars have a planet in the habitable zone, like that.
And then recently we found one that's like similar size to Earth and like similar. So there are, you know, and one of the weird things that I didn't really come to grasp until very recently, which I think is cool, is up until about 10 years ago, up until Kepler, we'd never actually seen another planet. We'd seen, like we'd never actually imaged another planet outside of our solar system, obviously. We'd seen Mars. You can see it with your naked eye. But outside of our solar system. So people had said, obviously scientists were like, yeah, there's other suns. There must be other planets. Like physically, it has to be this way. Mm. But we'd never actually imaged another planet until very recently. So we went from like never had seen one to seeing one or two, and now it's exploded, right? Because of our imaging capability.
The thing about life on other planets that I was just thinking about is like that the chances that whatever the life form is will be alive when we see it seems like really distant, because isn't like humanity's existence on the planet Earth in terms of the lifespan of the planet is just like a snap?
Yeah. Right? So there's two things, right? Like, so first off, if we find life in our solar system, then the odds are it's going to be alive because, you know, it's right here. Now, it depends on how we try and find life, right? Like right now, if you want to go to another planet, it's going to take you a long ass time to get there.
Right.
If we image it, if we're able to image that well, then maybe we might be able to find something that's close enough that we're not looking that far back in time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the further away it is, the farther back in time you're looking when you're seeing something. So yes, they could have been an existence ago. And just like people might be looking at planet Earth from somewhere else and might be seeing dinosaurs, right? Or like they might be seeing the creation of planet Earth, Lord knows. So yeah, that's true. And actually, Sadly, one of our best bets right now of actually finding intelligent life, at least, is that it's for them to contact us rather than the opposite way.
Yeah,
around,
we're
right?
not going
to. Because, you know, unless there's another major leap in technology, which could happen, right? We haven't really figured out a way to travel rapidly through the solar system yet. And so the odds of ever getting to another planet in our lifetime is limited, but you could conceive of someone else coming here. And that's why Carl Sagan, for example, put the golden record on Voyager so that if it ever was found, people could find us.
It feels like that could be a possibility, is that we find some sort of message from another civilization that existed a long time ago.
Yeah, well, you could potentially image them.
I feel like if there was life on other planets, they'd be coming here because... if they think dinosaurs are on the Earth, dinosaurs are cool.
Well, they probably think the same thing of us, right? They're probably like, why haven't they come to us yet? Right. We're pretty cool, but, you know, they might have space dinosaurs. I don't know.
Space dinosaurs!
Woo!
Electric guitar riff. Now it's time to get on like Spike Lee say, get on the bus. Go get your work and keep your beeper chirping, it's a must. Get you on that dust, cornstarch, familiar with that smack, man. The music is like that green stuff, provided to you by Sack Man. Pac-Man, how many fuck you think we gon' do that, man? Ride on Nash, no name change, ride no gap, man. I'm strap, man. Get rid of the bus on any nigga like that, man. Me and my nigga, we roll together like Batman and Rob Band. We pray together through hard times. All right, that was fun as hell. This is the title track off of Aquemini by Outkast, the album after their Alien concept album, AT Aliens. But Andre closes this one out with one of my favorite short verses and ends talking about the subject we ended on. I'd never been totally invested in the search for life on other planets until now. I'd just been like, so what if they find a bunch of amoebas asexually reproducing in some ice on Mars? How's that going to help me? Those amoebas going to put money in my pocket? Didn't think so. But knowing that it's basically a referendum on whether the universe is just lousy with intelligent life has me so much more interested in that quest. I'm totally going to start reading science news stories and trying to cut through the bullshit headlines, because the internet has turned people who publish science papers into BuzzFeed. All right, on to footnotes. We're going to be linking off to Farah's bio, as well as the episode of this podcast where we talked about the origins of the JPL, how NASA was born out of magic-loving, orgy-having nerds. We're going to show you that video in which these guys build a scale model of the solar system in the Black Rock Desert. We're going to show you Jupiter's surface in motion, a video of the night sky in time-lapse that I mentioned up top, pigeons in space, spiders in space, the Russian meteor crashing to Earth and Russians just not giving a fuck. We're going to show you a image gallery of the cupola module on the ISS, that sort of panoramic window on the International Space Station that she mentioned. We will link to the Drake equation, myths everyone believes about space thanks to movies on a site called Cracked. Things about space you're picturing almost exactly wrong. Reasons space travel will always suck. Reasons life in space sucks that sci-fi doesn't show you. The most mind-blowing things ever discovered in space. Real planets way weirder than anything in science fiction. Real planets that put science fiction to shame. And mind-blowing things found in our own solar system. Those are all Cracked articles. That's it. Hope you enjoy Aquemini. This is one of those songs that stops and starts, so be sure to stick around for the end for one of my favorite Andre verses of all time. It only lasts about 20 seconds, but it's worth it. That's it for us. Thanks to engineer Brett for putting it together. You can follow Brett at Brett, R-A-D-E-R, on Twitter. You can follow me at Jack_OBRIEN, and we'll be back next week with more podcast. Talk to you then. Twice upon a time, there was a boy who died and lived happily ever after. But that's another chapter. Live from up the braid with $30, beauty parlors, baby ballers, bowling ball and parlors, street scholars, majoring in culinary arts. You know how to work bread, cheese, and dough from scratch. But see, the catch is you can get caught. Know what you're selling, what you bought, so cut that big talk. Let's walk to the bridge, meet me halfway. Now you may see some chilling dead off in the pathway.
just them poor babies walking slowly to the candy lady. It's looking bad, need some hope, like the words maybe. If, or probably, more than a hobby. When my turntables get wobbly, they don't fall. I'm sorry, y'all, I often drift. I'm talking gifts, so when it comes, you never look the horse inside his grill. Of course you know I feel like the bearer of bad news. Don't wanna be it, but it's needed, so what have you? Now question, is every nigga with dreads for the cause? Every nigga with goals for the fall. No, so don't get caught up in appearance. It's Outkast, Aquemini, another black experience.
Okay, even the sun goes down, heroes eventually die. Horoscopes often lie, and it's sometimes why. Nothing is for show, nothing is for certain. None lasts forever, but until they close the curtain. It's him and I, Aquemini.
The name is Big Boy, Daddy Fat Sacks, the nigga that like them Cadillacs. I stay down with these streets, cause these streets is where my folks at. Better know that, some say we pro-black, but we professional. We missed a lot of the church, so the music is our confessional. Get off the testicles and the nutsacks. You bust round, we bust back, get back. The real niggas that's out here trying to spit facts. You hear that, you can't come near that, maybe you need to quit. Cause Aquemini is Aquarius and a Gemini running shit like this.
My mind warps and bends, floats the wind, count to ten. Meet the twin, Andre Ben, welcome to the lion's den. A red gen, no skin, many men comprehend. I extend myself, so you go out and tell a friend. Sin all depends on what you believe in. Faith is what you make it, that's the hardest shit since MC Ren. Alien can blend right on in with your kin. Look again, cause I swear I spot one every now and then. It's happening again, wish I could tell you when. Andre, this is Andre, y'all are just gonna have to make amends.
Even the sun goes down, heroes eventually die. Horoscopes often lie, and sometimes why. Nothing is for show, nothing is for certain. None lasts forever, but until they close the curtain, it's him and I, Aquemini.
In 1962, a mysterious strangler committed the first of 13 random murders, shocking Boston and the world.
Who were these women? And why would anyone want to kill them?
It was the largest manhunt in the city's history.
What is Mary Sullivan's picture doing on the front page of the paper with the Boston Strangler?
50 years later, the cases remain open. Stranglers, the new crime series from Earwolf. Subscribe now in iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Adam Sachs, and Chris Bannon. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.